And this other friend, my name is Gandhi Uli, and it is an absolute pleasure to have all of you here with us tonight. Now, I know we just gave him a big round of applause, but can we please put our hands together once again to welcome back from Malaysia, our friend John. His schedule is so packed that you have to book a year in advance. So we are indeed, 2 years in advance now. It's gone up, you know, in number. So thank you so much. We are very lucky to have you here with us. That is a pose that I really want to master, by the way. It's easy, huh? Now, not only is Ajahn here tonight to give us a Dhamma talk, but we are also celebrating the launch of his latest book, Good, Bad, Who Knows? And that's a very interesting title indeed, because we human beings, I think we have an innate desire to categorize and define things. Is this good? Is that bad? Black is black, white is white. We need to call a cup a cup. So much so that when the shades of gray in life comes in, we're not quite sure if the rules we live by are actually the right ones. So hopefully in the Dhamma talk tonight, Ajahn Brahm will be able to address all of that, or maybe we'll end up having more questions for him after the talk as we usually do. So here with us tonight, we'd like to welcome a few other special guests. Please put your hands together for the Venerable Dato Tee Sri Dabaratana Nayaka Mahathera, the Buddhist Chief High Priest of Malaysia and founder of Sri Rajana Buddhist Society. And also here with us, we have Jambu Bahagya Tan Sri Dato Denny Tan, the Group Executive Vice Chairman of Tropicana Corporation Bohai. Now, ladies and gentlemen, tonight's event is made possible by our main sponsor, Tropicana Corporation, and is also organized by Tiratana Buddhist Society and supported by Innovate Solutions. So, here to officially launch the book and join Ajahn Brahm on stage, please welcome our Chief High Priest, together with Yama Bahagia Puan Sri Datin Ivy Tan, on behalf of Tan Sri Dato Lenny Tan for Tropicana Corporation Berhad. We also have Dato Tony Lee, the advisor of Innovate Solutions, and Mr. Irving Ho, president of the Tiratana Buddhist Society. Please, gentlemen. And of course, thank you. Now, as many of you may know, Good, Bad, Who Knows is the sequel to Opening the Door of Your Heart. And here, I'm going to read a little excerpt from the book that I have with me now. And just before that, I have to say that Ajahn Brahm likes a running theme of animals. How to be a chicken farmer. How a mousetrap killed a chicken, pig, and cow. And asking your dog. Is that many titles in the book? Yeah? Okay, now, this is called Girlfriend Power, about wisdom in the book. So here it is. The son of one of my friends was staying out late with his girlfriend many nights a week. His grades at university were going down as a result. Like most boys of that age, he would not listen to his parents. So his father, a very smart man, found another way of making his son more disciplined. In the early hours of one morning, when his son arrived back home with his girlfriend after a night of clubbing, his father was standing outside his house waiting for them. "Come inside," he said to the both of them. So his son thought that he was in big trouble, but his dad never even spoke to him. Instead, he talked with his son's girlfriend, saying something like, "You have been going out with my son for a long time now. I don't know what the plans are, but who knows, you may decide to get married one day. If that happens, I'm sure you wouldn't want a husband who has got his degree and therefore cannot keep a good job. Because that might very well happen if my son keeps staying out so late. Just thought I should tell you," he told the couple. "Good night." So it wasn't surprising that the grades went up after that, huh? So very, very wise. That's just one of the many excerpts. And right now, ladies and gentlemen, please have a look at the screen as we present to you Good, Bad, Who Knows. Rabbit, ladies and gentlemen, under rough labels, both good, bad, who knows, has now been officially launched. Thank you very much. And I'll be thank you for standing on stage. Right now, I can now would like to present an autographed copy of this book to all our VIPs on stage. Tropicana Corporation Berhad, the little token of appreciation to Puan Sri Gandhi Adi Khan on behalf of country, the token in turn. And to Dr. Sunil, advisor of Innovate Solutions. Kevi, can we have a good photo together, please? Puan Sri, Dr. Tony. Women would like to present a token of appreciation to Ajahn Brahm for graciously being here tonight to present the Dhamma Talk. And next year, then we have a tune and a bonus down. Brilliant. Thank you. Are we good? Yes, a big thank you to our VIPs. You may now take your seat. Ladies and gentlemen, just before I can run into Dhamma Talk, and you guys are really looking forward to it, I have to tell you a little story. I got married in 2010, okay? And I remember saying to my mom several times, if only we could have Ajahn Brahm to preside over our marriage vows exchanging ceremony. But of course, it wasn't possible because we were all the way to Australia. So, you know, as a 20-year-old, we plan our wedding twice in a head. And one day, my mother-in-law called me from Malacca. She was at the Sakyaen Temple. And she said, Sakya, I'm standing here in front of this poster that says that Ajahn Brahm is going to be here on the 19th and 20th of November. And that happened to be the exact weekend that we were going to have our wedding. So, of course, I was like, that's a huge coincidence. You know what? Let's try to email him to see if he could come and preside over our wedding. And guess what? It actually happened. Gives me goosebumps until today just thinking about it. Not only was Ajahn Brahm in Malaysia, he was in Malacca. Not just in Malacca, but on the same weekend. Not just the same weekend, but the same day. Not just the same day, but the time that he was free, we were having a marriage ceremony. That, I think, is so amazing.
And you know what? The things that you say during the ceremony has really helped the marriage, because, you know, until today, I think communication is one of the strongest points in our marriage. So ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together.
That was a wonderful wedding, I remember that one. Again, because these are things which coincidence. You can't explain these things by coincidence. But people come together at the right time, the right place.
I've only been to America twice. And that was only many years apart. So it was a wonderful thing that that could happen. So the things that are not talking so much about marriages, they're talking about the question about transition,
which is the sequel to opening the door of your heart, which has been incredibly popular, at least over 1 million copies now worldwide. And the reason is that everybody likes to understand things in using the medium of stories. Now, in all our cultures, for centuries, we've imparted the wisdom of our ancestors and our religions to these amazing stories. And these are stories that we have ordinary life. A couple of days ago, there was a monk, a Theravada monk, who went to Indonesia and did a survey. What Buddhists in Indonesia wanted to learn from Buddhism? And I was told that the survey said they wanted to have teachings from Buddhism which they could use in their everyday life, just like Ajahn Brahm does, they said. And this is one of the reasons why these talks are very popular, because these stories, which you can listen to today, and you can get from the book later on, these actually work and give people a happier, a peaceful life, and they make your understanding of this thing called Buddhism far deeper, because this was the intention of the Buddha, to lessen people's suffering, to give people more happiness, more wisdom, more freedom, and this is how these teachings actually do work. And I do apologize that we've only got apparently 300 books available, maybe less now that the VIPs have got the first ones. But I was saying that as a monk, I know about marketing, because if we had too many, then we wouldn't be able to increase the demand. When you only have 300, everyone gets very excited and you can't all get them, and the demand actually increases. Even as a monk, I know how business works. But we call the book Good, Bad, Who Knows, because that is one of the stories in the book, which I have been using a long time. And this actually is a good example of how we can use these great teachings of the Buddha to actually help people deal with unexpected events of life, difficulties, problems, and disappointments. So for those of you who haven't heard the story before, it's a story about a king many years ago who loved to go hunting in the forest. And one day when he was off hunting in the forest, he had a little accident and he cut his finger. And there was a doctor with him on the hunt. He called the doctor over. My finger is cut. The doctor put a little bandage on it. The king said, "Is my finger going to be all right?" And the doctor replied, "Good? Bad? Who knows?" Now that is not reassuring. If you go see your doctor, and you say, and that's what he said, you'd be wondering about what's going on. But he was on the hunt, enjoying himself. So he carried on hunting. And when he got back to the palace, he had to call the doctor again because his finger was inflamed and red. It was infected. So the doctor cleaned up the wound, put some ointment on the wound, and gave a sterile bandage over the wound. And once that little procedure was finished, again, the king asked the doctor, is my finger going to be okay now? And for a second time, the doctor replied, good, bad, who knows? And a few days later, the king was in big trouble. He had to call the doctor again because his finger was so infected, the doctor had to amputate the finger. And the king was not happy. He was not impressed. In fact, he was so angry with this incompetent, stupid doctor. He took him down to the dungeons underneath his castle and put him in a cell and locked the door himself. You stupid doctor, look, I've lost my finger now because of you. And what do you think about being in jail, you stupid doctor? And the doctor replied, being in jail, your majesty? Good? Bad? Who knows? And the king went away. That was a crazy doctor. A few days later, the king, when his finger was healed enough, was out doing his favorite hobby, hunting again. And this time he was following an animal in the forest, chasing after it on his horse. And he got separated from the rest of his entourage. He was alone in the forest. He got lost and went deeper and deeper into the forest. And there, lost in the forest, he was captured by the indigenous forest people, the natives. Because it was a full moon day, and on that full moon day, they had to do, as part of their religion, a sacrifice. A human sacrifice. And what better sacrifice than a king? So they tied the king to the sacrificial tree in the middle of a clearing, and the priest got out the sacrificial knife and they started banging the drums. Boom, 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 boom. And they started chanting louder and louder and louder as they were about to cut the king's throat. And then the priest shouted, stop! We cannot sacrifice this man. He is not perfect enough. He's only got 9 fingers. Because if you're going to give a gift, if you're going to give like a meal to the chief reverend, it has to be perfect. You can't give like an apple or a banana which is just half moldy and rotten. So they realized they could not sacrifice this man because he was not perfect enough. So they had to let him go. And just by luck, they took him back to the palace, showed him the way. And when he got back to the palace, he realized the great wisdom of that doctor. He went straight down to the dungeons and released the doctor himself and said, sorry, I never realized your great wisdom. I always thought that losing a finger was bad, but actually, it saved my life. But it was a very bad thing. I apologize for putting you in jail. I didn't understand. It's a bad thing I did. I'm sorry. And the doctor said, what do you mean, a bad thing, putting me in jail? Your Majesty, it was a very good thing that you put me in jail. If I had been in prison, I would have been with you on that hunt, and I've got 10 fingers. Now you understand the meaning of that story. Some things happen to you in life, and you think, oh, that's really bad. For example, one of my disciples over in Jakarta, he was working in a company, and one day his boss called him into the office and asked him to resign. Now, I don't know if you have bosses like this in KL, but in Jakarta, they really are tough. Because, no exaggeration, the boss took out a revolver from the door, put it to his head, and resign or I will shoot you. So this poor man had no choice but to resign. And he went back home without a job. He had a young family, two little kids, and he bought a house with a big bank loan. And he thought this was the end of the world. He thought a terrible thing had happened to him. But after one or two days, he thought, well, I've got to do something. I might as well use all the contacts which I have made in my business, use all my knowledge which I have accumulated through all these years of work in this company, and start my own business, which he did. And he's highly successful. He is a millionaire now. And this, he said, if I hadn't been forced to resign, I'd still be working in this company, just as maybe middle management. But now, this terrible thing which happened to me actually turned out to be the very best. He understood good, bad, who knows. So if that ever happens to you tomorrow, your boss calls you into the office, I guess we're involved with that. It might be the best thing which ever happened to you. At the time, we don't know. And that is the meaning of the story. So when these difficulties happen, don't always get so depressed or angry. It could be great for you. As for my own story, I remember this because I was talking to Dr. Tony about his sons. They're trying to find a university somewhere in the UK. And one of the universities his son was looking at was Durham University. And I spent 1 year in Durham University because my girlfriend was there. Before I was a monk. And you know, I went up there because she was there. And after about 3 months, she dumped me. She dumped me, I didn't dump her. And at the time I thought, oh, that's really awful, that's terrible. I felt so upset and sad. I thought it was bad. But now, that was good. If she hadn't dumped me, I would never become a monk. Thank you, girlfriend, thank you. So remember, whatever happens in life to you, don't just get depressed, don't get angry, don't get negative, because sometimes you don't know just how this will all work out in the future. And sometimes, and it happens more often than people really understand, sometimes the difficult things which happen to us in life turn out to be blessings in disguise. Opportunities to grow, opportunities to expand our awareness, our business or whatever. Sometimes what we think is bad in the long term actually is very, very good for us. So remember that when any disaster happens in your life, in your family, in your health, don't just say it's bad. Always remember, good, bad, who knows? Just like if your son does not pass his A-levels. Is that bad? Good. Who knows? I'm going to get in trouble with that one. But what it's doing is like learning a different way of looking at life. And this is what wisdom is all about. Learning to look at life in a different way, in a beautiful, wonderful way. Now, just in Zandria's introduction, she was telling me all about these animal stories that which I talk about in my book. Because people can relate to animals. But sometimes we don't realize the great wisdom of animals. And especially animals in our modern world. Because one of my favorite stories in that book concerns a beautiful dog, a Labrador dog, who rushed into a person's house uninvited. She was coming back from shopping, and she had her hands full of shopping bags with all the supplies for the house for the next few days. And as she opened her house in a suburb somewhere in the world, a Labrador dog rushed right past her into her house. She didn't know who the dog belonged to or where it came from, just rushed right past her into the house. And of course she couldn't do anything because her hands were full of bags. So she went to the kitchen, put the bags down, and checked out this dog. Do you know what this dog was doing? It had curled up quietly in the corner of one of the rooms and was fast asleep. And it wasn't a stray dog, it was clean, it had a collar on. And you know, you like dogs, dogs are nice, especially if they're clean, they're not stray, they're just sleeping. So she thought, oh, I'll just let it sleep. And it slept there for 2 or 3 hours, and then it got up, and then you know, she opened the door, and the dog went away again. And the same thing happened the next day. The dog came back again. Went to the same spot in the same room, curled up, and went to sleep for another couple of hours. And that happened 3 days in a row. And she wondered, why is this dog coming into my house? Where does this dog come from? Because it's obviously well cared for. So she had a very good idea. She got out a piece of paper, and she wrote a little note on the piece of paper. I don't know where this dog comes from, but it's very well behaved. I love dogs. It's a beautiful dog. It's welcome to come into my house. It's come for a sleep 2 hours every day. Could you please tell me why and where it comes from? And when she wrote that note, she tucked it under the collar. And after 2 hours, the dog went back home again. And it appeared, wherever that was, and appeared the very next day with a new note, with the answer. And when she read the answer, she said, this is my dog. I live in a house with a wife who's always nagging, with 4 children, 2 under 5 years of age, and my dog comes to your house for some peace and quiet every day. Can I please come too? Even dogs get stressed out in our little world. They can imagine if you've got little children and they play with the dog, that poor dog doesn't get a moment's rest. So we'll go to somebody else in the house and get some peace and quiet. But that's actually why we have temples too, for people to come and get some peace and quiet. So, Venerable Chief Reverend, please, maybe I'll go to do any more buildings in the Mahavihara. Please just get a few quiet rooms where husbands who've got nagging wives can just go and sleep for a couple of hours. It'd be very popular. And another one for wives who have to, you know, listen to their husbands all the time. But this is actually our modern world. We do learn a lot from sort of animals. But one of the other ones you mentioned about ask your dog, that's actually a very powerful and very deep little story. Because as Buddhists, you know, we're always supposed to be really kind and caring for animals, especially our own pets, so we get to love, they're like part of the family. So what do we do when our pet, our dog, our cat, say develops a cancer? We go to the doctor and they go to the doctor. When your dog is too sick, I have to kill it. Sometimes they call it put it down, euthanize it, but let's call it the right word, kill it. And it's a very difficult thing for a Buddhist. If I kill the dog, I'm killing somebody I love, and I'm not supposed to do that as a Buddhist. But if I just leave it as it is, it's having so much pain and suffering, then that's not kind, that's not compassionate. So they have a dilemma for Buddhists when your pet gets very, very sick. What should you do? And that's why my answer, which is, it's wise, but also it's practical, it actually works. Ask your dog. Now, to understand exactly what I mean, the story, you know, from all the anecdotes of my life, all the real stories which actually happened, Julie, her name was, she was at our center last Friday before I left to come here. Last Friday, some years ago, she had a beautiful little dog, and she loved it, looked after it all her life, but it got cancer. She took it to the vet, and even though she was not a wealthy woman, she would spend anything to try and make sure her darling little dog didn't suffer. But unfortunately, all the treatments to try and get the cancer into remission did not work. So one day, when she took the dog to the vet to be examined, the vet said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing more we can do. I have to kill your dog to put it down." And she remembered my little story. So she said, "Can I please take a couple of minutes alone with my dog?" So she went to a quiet room in the surgery, held the dog in her arms, looked at the dog into the eyes, and asked her dog, "Do you want to die? Have you had enough? Or do you want to carry on for a little while?" If that is your dog or cat, and you've known them for such a long time, you will know the answer. You'll feel it inside. You call it intuition if you like. Whatever it is, you know whether your dog has had enough or whether it wants to carry on. In this particular case, she felt very, very clearly the dog did not want to die, was happy to carry on a little bit longer. So she went back and told the vet, "I'm sorry, I won't allow you to kill my dog, I'm taking it home." At which the vet said, "You Buddhists are so cool, you're supposed to be compassionate, that dog is suffering, you should not do this, that's bad, that's stupid." But she stood her ground and she took her dog home, against the vet's advice. 3 months later, she took the dog to see the vet again. The dog had made a full recovery. Now this happens sometimes with people, it happens with animals too. Miraculous recovery. And the vet just examined the dog thoroughly. Cancer had totally disappeared. And she told my friend Judy, my disciple Judy, "You Buddhists are very wise." We really know how to do these things. Because it is true, the dogs, the cats, they know when they've had enough or not. Just like if that happens to be your mother or your father, you know, in the bed and in a coma. And you have to make that decision, which sometimes is a terrible decision you have to make. The doctor says, "Should we take off the life support or not?" And you have to make that decision. Or do you? Really, it's not your decision to make. Ask your mother or your father who's in the coma. Ask them. And you'll be surprised how you'll know what the answer is. You'll feel it. No, she wants to carry on. She's still in there. She's still struggling. Or sometimes you realize, no, she's already gone. And then you're following this heart. You are not actually killing your mother or father, as you do when she can speak to you, or he can speak to you. You are finding out her wishes and following her wishes. I've done that so many times. Taught that to my disciples over in Australia and other places, and it's incredible how well that works. It solves a very wonderful, a very difficult problem we have in life. These are real difficult problems. You have to know what you should do when the doctor asks you these terrible life and death questions. And this is how you answer them. If it's a dog or a cat, ask the dog or cat. You'll know what the answer is if that's your dog or cat. If it is your mother or father or other relation, you will know whether it's the right thing to do or not. That, that is how, you know, we deal with these situations. And of course, you don't need to be a Buddhist, you know, to follow these pieces of advice. Anyone can do these pieces of advice because they're very powerful, which is one of the reasons over in Indonesia. You know, these talks, this book is really popular in Indonesia, for every religion over there. In fact, I was in Bali, I was just going to Dr. Carter just about 6 months ago to do a retreat. And as I was in the airport in Bali, just waiting, Denver's out waiting for my connection, and all these people came up to me. Muslims, Christians, the Catholic priests. Oh, you're Ajahn Mom. I need your stories out in my church. Is that okay? Yeah, of course, go for it. Because they're helping people and dealing with the problems and difficulties they have in life. And somebody said that the stories, they're not just for people of different religions, they're also for people of different ages as well. Because the other animal story, which Sandhya mentioned, which is a great little story, is how a mouse trap killed a chicken, a pig, and a cow. Because you think, how can a little mouse trap kill such big animals? And this is how, it's a great story for your kids as well as you, of how we should always help one another. Because no matter who the other people are, we should always help one another. Because in this story, there were a group of five mice who lived in a farmhouse. And they had friends, a chicken, a pig, and a cow who lived in the farmyard. And because they were friends, and because the mice lived inside the house, if they heard that the farmer wanted to have roast chicken for lunch, they would actually tell the chicken and say, go and hide, make yourself scarce, the farmer wants chicken today. And that would actually save the chicken's life. If they wanted pork sausages, they would tell the pig, act like you're sick. Act like you're ill, because otherwise they'll cut you up into sausages. And if they wanted steak, they'll tell the cow, they want steak today, go to another field, hide. And that way the mice would save these three big animals' lives. But what happened one day? One of the mice was looking through a crack in the wall of the farmhouse, and they saw the farmer's wife open up a package from the post. But when they saw what the contents of the package was, the poor mouse almost had a heart attack. Because he saw the farmer's wife take out a mouse trap. Said, oh my goodness, they're trying to kill us. We're going to be dead, we're toast, we've had it. Imagine if that was you, and you just, you know, happened to see what your wife was actually, you know, opening from a package from the post. There's a bottle of strychnine. You think, oh my God, she's trying to kill somebody. So that poor mouse was very afraid. Because why do you have a mouse trap, you know, in a house? The mice always run around. It's only a matter of time before one of them steps in it and gets killed. So they all met together and said, how can we escape this? They didn't know how. So they thought, we'd go and ask our friends for help. So they first of all went to Mrs. Chicken. Mrs. Chicken, they've got a mouse trap in the house. We're going to die. Please help us. You know what the chicken said? None of my business. A mouse trap can't get a chicken. Not my problem. Sort it out for yourself. And they were just so disappointed. They always helped the chicken. But when they wanted help, the chicken said, none of my business. So they went to see the pig. And the pig said pretty much the same. Mousetrap can't hurt me, so look after yourselves. And they went to the cow. And the cow just was eating grass and hardly ever looked up. Never even gave them a move for an answer. Him and the cow wouldn't help them. So they went back, really disappointed. They had helped their friends, and the friends thought it was none of their business and wouldn't help them. And that night, one of the mice was just roaming around looking for a midnight snack, roaming around the floor when suddenly, BAM! He stepped into the mouse trap. And that poor mouse died. Because it was a good mouse, it went to mouse heaven. Did it go to heaven? If they did go to heaven, it had to be a different heaven from the cats. Otherwise, it's not much of a heaven for the mice. And they were kind mice looking after their friends. So went straight to heaven. And all the other mice, they heard the sound of the mouse trap being sprung. And they all came out to see what had happened. And there, they saw one of their friends, their dear brother, dead in the mouse trap. And they were so sad, they started crying. And they started holding each other up, as you do when you try and comfort each other, taking turns crying and holding each other in their hands. They were grief-stricken that their friend had died. And the wife heard something strange. So she got out of bed to check what had gone on. And there she saw these four mice crying, holding each other in their arms. She'd never seen that before. She was so surprised that out of shock she fainted. When the farmer came down, he had to take her to bed. And from that day on, she was sick with shock. And the farmer said, "What do you give people when they're sick?" I had an idea. Chicken soup. So guess where the chicken soup came from? He called that chicken, cut its head off, and put it in a pot with some garlic and potatoes and salt, and gave it to his wife to try and make her better. And also, you know what happens when somebody is sick? You go and visit them. So all his friends came to visit the farmer's wife who was sick. And the farmer said, what can I give my visitors as snacks to eat?
Sausage.
Yes, you've got it. Sausage rolls. And you know where the sausage came from? The poor pig had to be killed to give some snacks to the people who came to visit. But it doesn't matter, as much chicken soup as he gave his wife, as much as all the friends came to visit, the wife never got better. She died. And of course, you know, at a funeral, you have to give some food to your guests. So I thought I'd give them roast beef sandwiches. And the only place you can get roast beef from was from the cow. And that is how a little mouse trap killed a chicken, a pig, and a cow. Simply because they didn't help one another. How many times is it that a friend of yours or a colleague comes to ask you for help? They think, oh, not my problem. It won't affect me. But it does. So even if you can't see how things are connected, you don't know why it will affect you. It does. So, if someone asks for help, and there's any possibility you can give help, please help one another. Be compassionately caring for one another. It doesn't mean the same thing, actually doing it as well. I remember once, it's actually in Singapore. I had a free morning, and one of my friends there, he was running the Buddhist library in Singapore. And he was trying to raise some money for his temple, and I had a free morning. They were doing a charity run, or charity walk, sorry. So I turned up to I'll walk as well, get some sponsorship as well. So I volunteered myself to do this walk, and you know there was a politician one of the ministers in the Singapore government always was there as well. And he gave a speech at the beginning. And I asked him afterwards, are you going on the walk? He said, no, I'm not going on the walk. I said, you're a person who talks the walk, but you don't walk the talk. But that's what happened. As soon as he gave the talk, he was off. You can't do that. If you're going to give the talk, you have to do the walk as well. And that's really important. So, the gifts are in your kids. You can help one another, and they ask for help, you help them as well. And that way you can have a very, very productive, happy, healthy, and successful world. When everybody, doesn't matter what religion, what race, what country, you can't just say, oh, whatever happens in some other country in the world doesn't affect Malaysia. Of course it does. So when people ask for help, always remember those little mice asking for help, because the pig, the chicken and the cow never realize how a mouse grab would affect them, but it does. So little pieces of wisdom like that, they really help. Another on the subject of politicians, when I leave here, I'm going to Sri Lanka. I'm invited by the president of Sri Lanka to go and give some talks. The full moon day of June is post-holiday. It's the day when Buddhism first came to Sri Lanka. I remember the first time I went to see the president of Sri Lanka, like many heads of state, like many politicians, he was always in big trouble in the press. Always getting told off and making the wrong decisions. Because anybody who's in public life, a minister, or even the top business people, you're always open, you know, for the press, you know, to say bad things about you. So I told him the wonderful story of the donkey who fell in the well. So one day, there was a donkey who was just wandering through the forest, minding his own business. And unfortunately, he was thinking of something else when he fell into a well. The well was dry, and fortunately, he didn't break any bones. But the donkey was stuck in the bottom of a well. And donkeys can't climb out of wells. So he started shouting out, "Eeyore! As loud as he possibly could. And after about 1 hour, someone heard that poor donkey stuck in the bottom of the well. And unfortunately, the person who heard it was a really, really bad man. A farmer who never liked that donkey. And when he saw the donkey in the bottom of the well, he said, "Serve you right, you stupid donkey. That's right where I want you." But then the farmer thought, that is a dangerous well. And he always meant to fill it up. So now he decided to fill the well up with the donkey in the bottom. To bury that poor donkey alive. So he got out of Spain and started shoveling dirt into that well. And the donkey didn't know what was going on. All this mud and dirt was falling on the donkey's back. And when the donkey realized he was being buried alive, the donkey went even louder, "Eeyore! Eeyore! Eeyore!" Whenever you give any talks, you must always raise your voice, otherwise people fall asleep.
Indeed.
Suddenly the donkey went quiet. And the farmer thought, I didn't think I'd put that much earth in the well already, but maybe I've already buried the donkey. So the farmer just kept on shoveling earth, but at a slow pace. He hadn't buried the donkey. The donkey had got what we call in Buddhism insight. Insight is when we understand what's going on. When we understand what's going on, we get solutions. Instead of shouting out, E-or, when you have a problem in life, stop, be quiet, meditate, and think. And you'll find a solution. Was a donkey here, every shovelful of earth, it shook it off its back, backed it in, and the donkey got a centimeter higher. Another shovelful of earth shrunk it off, stabbed it in, and another centimeter higher. Every shovelful of earth, the donkey got higher and higher and higher. And the farmer was so busy shoveling, he didn't notice a pair of donkey ears appear on the top of the well. He never saw the smiling head of the donkey until the donkey got close enough to the top of the well, the donkey could jump out and run away. That is how the donkey escaped. When I told that to President Mahinda Rajapaksa, I said, when the newspapers throw dirt on you, don't get upset and angry. Shrug it off, stamp it in, and you'll be even higher. So that's for politicians, how they can actually have a much happier life using Buddhist wisdom. But you know, here we don't have many politicians, but we've got many doctors here, business leaders. And I know a lot about business. Actually, I do get invited to many, many business conferences, and some of my stories are actually on Harvard Business School blog. True, absolutely true. And one of the stories is actually understanding how the stock market works. Do you know how the stock market works? I know how it works. If you can understand how it works, you can imagine how wealthy you can become. This is how the stock market works in Wall Street and everywhere else. It's a story of a monastery in the north of India. You know, it's a very famous monastery, and they had very good meditating monks who were noted for their wisdom and also some of their psychic powers as well. And unfortunately, the old abbot and teacher passed away, and they elected a new abbot and teacher. And he'd only been in the job a couple of months, but it started coming to the winter time, October, November, in the mountains in the north of India. And the other monks asked their abbot, their teacher, is it going to be a cold winter this year? Because if it's very cold, we have to really collect a lot of firewood to keep the monastery warm. And the abbot said, to be on the safe side, I think it's going to be a very cold winter. But the truth was, his meditation was not that good. He was making it up. Because he wanted to impress his new disciples. But that evening he thought, what if I make a mistake? So, he had an idea. He made an anonymous phone call to the weather bureau. And he got a professor of meteorology. And he asked him anonymously, said, what are the signs for winter in the mountains this year? And the professor said, I think it's going to be a cold winter. So the next morning, the abbot said, I have seen in my meditation it's going to be a cold winter. So yes, you must collect lots of firewood. So the next week, all the monks collected lots of firewood. And after that, the abbot thought, I wonder if the professor was right. So he decided to make a second anonymous call and said, what are the signs now, 1 week later? And Professor Meteorology said, the signs have got much worse. I think it's going to be a very, very cold winter in the mountains this year. So the monk the next morning told all the other monks, the signs are, it's going to be a very cold winter. I've seen that. You better collect even more firewood. So the monks worked even harder for the second week, collecting more firewood. And after the second, they had so much firewood that the monk decided, just let's do another call to see how it's going. The third call to the professor. The professor said, look, it's getting worse every time. I think it's really, really going to be one of the coldest winters ever in the mountains. Thank you, said the anonymous caller. And so the next day, he had a very long sermon to the other monks. He said, look, put all of your other duties aside. I have foreseen it's going to be the coldest winter ever in these mountains. Stop anything else and collect as much firewood as you possibly can. So those monks were up early in the morning, working all day, collecting as much firewood as they could. And after they collected so much, the monks thought, what if I make a mistake? So he asked, he phoned up the professor for a fourth time. He said, are you really sure it's going to be a bad winter? He said, look, it's going to be a Guinness Book of Records bad winter. And the monk said, how do you know? And the professor said, because all the monks in the monastery have been collecting firewood. Now you know how the stock market works. The best is so dull, it's just we don't follow each other. So when you understand something, because it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? That's actually how these things work. So when you can see these things as a monk, you know, how does a monk know these things? That's interesting, isn't it? This is actually how life really works. And so when we understand how life works, with these stories, number one, it's funny, isn't it, when we tell these stories? It's amusing. But one of the reasons it is amusing is because there's so much truth in it. That's one of the wonderful things I like about life. Is that people, they always make mistakes, and we laugh at ourselves, and when we do something funny, or do make a mistake, and we see the joy in life, we realize we don't have to be perfect. It's one of the other stories about, you don't need to be perfect in life, so please don't try to be perfect. I was a school teacher for 1 year, and I had to set a test in mathematics, the first exam I'd ever set in mathematics. And I never knew how to do that. So I asked the senior teacher, what do you do to set an exam? And they gave me this very good advice. They said, don't set it too hard. Because if the average score is 30-40%, then the children in your class will lose their motivation. They will think they can't do maths, and they will give it up and do some other subject. But if you set it too easy, so everyone gets 100%, 98%, the test has got no worth at all. So he said to me, try and get the test to get an average score of 70%, 7 out of 10. That's a good score, which means that all the children in your class will keep their motivation. They will retain the belief they can do mathematics. And that important 30% where they make mistakes, that's where me, as their teacher, can find out their weak points. I can discover what they haven't understood and address those points in my next lessons. And I thought how wise that was. Not just in the examinations in mathematics, but in the test of life. If you always score 100% in life, or 98%, you don't learn very much. you have fun, you never get challenged. If you only score 30 or 40% in life, you get depressed. You lose your motivation to work hard. But if you get 70% in life, 70% success, 30% trouble, that is the very best. The 70% keeps you happy and motivated, that you're a good person and successful. The 30% where you fail, that is where you learn and where you grow, where actually things start to develop in your life. So the 70% rule is the very best. And I say that to all the girls here. If your husband is 70%, keep him. He's the best. If he's 100%, dump him. You won't learn anything. 70% is the best. Because people don't understand what perfection is in life. Because, you know, sometimes I get people who come to see me and they really have had a very difficult life. Now, they have been sexually abused when they were young, physically abused, or gone through maybe lost both of their parents or whatever. They've had very difficult childhoods. They come up to me and say, they are damaged girls. And then I ask them, can you go and have a walk in the forest where I live? Now, you've been to the forest, Gordon Garden Monastery, down to the valley. You've seen our forest there. I ask them to have a walk in the forest and please find a perfect tree for me. One which is straight, with all the branches equally spaced, with all green leaves, not yellow leaves and brown leaves, with the bark perfectly smooth, without any damage, without any scars or knots on the bark. If you can find a tree like that in the forest, you'll be the first person ever to find such a tree. In the natural forests, all the trees are crooked and bent. They've all got branches hanging off. They've all got a lot of damage on their trunks, which is why they are beautiful. Those are the trees which I like the most. The crooked, bent trees with so much damage on them. So if you are crooked and bent, if you are damaged girls, you belong as one of the beautiful trees in the forest of humanity. Welcome. Isn't it the case, the crooked tree, they got character, they got beauty to them, and all of the scars on their bark, that is what makes them very wonderful to look at and be with. Just like human beings. So, you girls, if your husband is crooked, if your wife is damaged goods, wonderful, they're beautiful, love them. What we're doing here is changing our perceptions of life. You see beauty, seeing acceptance in places where some people just don't see it. And there's a big problem in life. Just change your attitudes, just change the way you look at life, see things in accordance to Dharma. And it's amazing just how peaceful and happy we can all become. Even old people. When you get old, you know what it's like when you get old, you have to wear glasses because your eyes aren't any good. You know, your hearing is not good. And sometimes you have to use a stick to walk because your legs aren't good. Your hands shake. You ever notice, as you get old, most of your body gets weaker, starts to decay. Except for one part of your body gets stronger with age. You know what part gets stronger with age? the mouth. Old people, they can't hear, they can't see, but my goodness, they can talk.
Indeed. It is very true. I know that.
You love them for that. Oh, fine. And that is very dangerous thing all of my life. So these are just some stories which I have written in that little book, just to give you a taste of what it's, that sort of book is all about. Stories about life, about how to live life. But just because they're stories, sometimes people say, well, as Buddhists, what about some deep stories? And there's one story in there, which is one of my teacher's stories, and probably the deepest story which he ever told me. I always wanted to put that story in a book. I could never find a place for it. And I thought, in good, bad, who knows, let's put a story about enlightenment itself in that book. Something which is very, very profound. My master, Ajahn Chah, in Thailand, I was with him for 9 years. And I must say, this is the most powerful, deepest story which he ever gave. I usually only tell this story when I do meditation retreats, but I'm going to share it with you now because it is one of the great stories in my book, from Ajahn Chah. It was almost 40 years ago now I became a monk. And I became a monk in Thailand, in Ajahn Chah's monastery. And one of the first similes he gave to us in the first year I was a monk was that his monastery in the northeast of Thailand was a mango orchard where the mango trees were planted by the Buddha. So I realized this was a simile. And he said, because of the great wisdom and compassion of the Buddha, every one of those mango trees is full of mango fruit, ripe, sweet, delicious mangoes on every branch and twig of those mango trees. And he said, this is the most important part of the simile, he said, you monks, nuns, lay men, lay women, you don't have to climb up the mango tree to get a mango. You don't have to throw a stick up to get the mango to fall, nor shake the mango tree. All you need to do to get a mango to fall is sit perfectly still under the mango trees planted by the Buddha. Open up your hand and a mango will fall. And I heard that, I thought my teacher was stupid. I did. I thought again. But you see mango trees in Malaysia? If you sit, how long do you think you'd have to sit under a mango tree before one fell? And if it did fall, it'd probably fall on your head, not on your hand. But after many, many years of a monk, that is the most beautiful story. For those of you who want to become enlightened, to be able to sit perfectly still and open up your heart, and all these beautiful things which the Buddha taught, all the great deep meditations, the most powerful insights, and even enlightenment itself, falls into your hand. But if you try and climb that tree, if you shake it or throw sticks at it, nothing falls at all. Be still and open up your heart with compassion, and all the mangoes of enlightenment will fall, just as they've been falling for 2,500 years in all the countries of our world, thanks to great wisdom and compassion of the Buddha. Thank you, Basin.
I don't know what you can do. And thank you so much for all the wonderful stories. As always, Now, ladies and gentlemen, it now gives us great pleasure to invite on stage the Venerable Dato K. Sri Dhammaratana Nayaka Mahathera, the Buddhist Chief High Priest of Malaysia and founder of Sri Ratana Buddhist Society, to come on stage to say a few words.
Good, bad, who knows? Venerable Ashram Manso and Venerable Sisters and Francis and Dato's and dear Brothers and Sisters in the town. Yes, now we have been here almost 1 hour without your dinner. But I don't think now you are going to complain I'm hungry. Venerable Ashram Brahmanso has explained his experience. Yesterday somebody was asking me, is Michael Jackson is coming tomorrow? I said, what? I think he is. Michael Jackson is coming tomorrow? From Australia. Then only I realized Ashram Brahman will be coming. Yes. So if you want to come and listen to this dummy talk, please register as early as possible. And today, our own beloved Michael Jackson from Australia, Ashram Brahman, here without singing, but by using his sweet mouth, he managed to pull all of you into the good and bad who knows. I just give you one example. I supposed to sit on the stage. Earlier organizers came, Chief, better you be with the Ashram Brahman. So later, Venerable, I think better your seat with the VIPs. I was thinking, Ashram Brahman, actually, we know each other, so I must be together. But later, I have realized, if I sit together with him, instead of I'm enjoying listening to his Dhamma talk, I have to suffer. You know, the flashlight come into my eyes, I may feel sleepy. But thanks to the organizers and by arranging me to be together with all of you to listen to his Dhamma talk, which are going to my own organizer. And on behalf of the Sriyatana Buddhist Society, I would like to say through sincere heart, thank you and big sadhu to Ashram Brahman being with us today to enlighten all of you by using through his own experience. And of course, Tansi and Kwansi Dhani Tan, he has, without hesitating, he has allowed us to organize Dhamma talk in his place. And of course, this whole religious function, the Dhamma talk, has organized with the single-handed super lady, Darling Catherine Black. She has two hands, but she worked in London and Malaysia with thousands of people carried this evening to bring into one person's Dhammato, Krishna's Dhammato. And she has told me, wherever we are very lucky, Acham Ram is coming to launch his Dhammato. Why not we organize Dhammato? Then, together with our other brothers and sisters, starting Catherine Lai, with sincere heart, she has organized with our Tiradhana Buddhist Society members. Of course, Tiradhana Buddhist Society is very pretty young organization, but all of you know it's the Tiradhana Welfare Society. So, as one of the activities we support to educate our people with Dhamma, we jointly or we together, we organize to make this event very successful. And again, although the Dhamma Catherine Lai want to organize, although our Buddhist society came together, but it's still not enough. If she did not get blessing for the Dhamma, don't leave. Today, she may be not continue to organize. But Dato Tony Lee, he really has given full support to make this event successful through sincere heart. So once again, on behalf of our brothers and sisters, I would like to thank Sri Dato and Jatin Catherine Lai being leading us to make tonight this event. And with these few words, once again, I would like to say big sadhu and thank you to each and every one of you. And on behalf of our Malaysian Buddhist community, and on behalf of the Tan Sri and Tuan Sri Dani Tan, and on behalf of all of you, now I would like to humbly would like to invite you to come for next year. To make our people to feel the Dhamma in their mind. Although, yes, we have plenty of time. One more year to go, you can write while you are traveling. You can start tonight onwards. And